Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, y'all. Glenn the King here from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 17th, 2012, episode 318, sponsored today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears the same thing wrong.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning. I believe that we're going to... Glenn?
Yes, I'm here. Jennifer, Mr. Q. I just changed things up this morning, and Jennifer, Mr. Q.
You always say what's on today's show. You didn't say I wasn't going to get an intro.
Oh, no, I meant to write that out in the bumper music. You're waiting for you.
You can't throw off the producer like that. First of all, I know Glenn wanted to mix it up a little bit. Good morning, everybody. Hope you're having a wonderful morning so far. Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show before Glenn starts his rant?
Why, thank you so very much, Jamie. On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, creator of the Equestrian Social Media Awards, Liam, here to bring us the latest and greatest now that the voting has begun for the 2012 awards. By the way, don't forget to vote for Horse Radio Network in Category 19, Broadcast Media. And next, Barry Stout is calling in from somewhere in Colorado this morning to give us the who, what, where, why, and when of, get this, snow polo. As if that sport wasn't sufficiently dangerous as it is. And to round out the show, the Horse.com's Horse Health Report is all about hox injections. Is it a quick fix or is it a long-term solution? So stay tuned and find out.
Thank
I have
you,
opinions
Jennifer.
About that, too. I've got hock injection opinions. I can't wait.
Well, you used to, what a lot of people that are new listeners don't know is you used to work for a vet office. So you've experienced all this stuff firsthand for a number of years working for the vet.
Yes. I
and
have
that's
been a
part of the reason that you love Wednesday.
Yes, I love it when the horse.com comes on. It's interesting and informative, and Dr. Jones and I either fight or hug. It depends.
Well, today we would normally on a Wednesday start with Daily Winnies, which I have taken off the show today, and much to Jamie's chagrin. And we would normally also start begging for really bad ads from Craigslist for you to send your really bad ads in. But as a lot of you may have noticed, this is kind of a blackout day for many websites to have blacked their pages out, and Craigslist is one of them. You won't be reading any Craigslist ads today. You won't be going to Wikipedia today. Even Google has blacked out their banner today. You'll see on Facebook there is a little thing that says stop censorship up in the upper left-hand corner, and you're probably all kind of wondering what that's all about. And in podcasting, this what they're talking about directly affects us. I've received a number of emails from podcasting outfits that have asked us to talk about it on today's show, so that's what we're going to do. And the first just couple minutes of the show today, I wanted to do the best I could to explain what all of this protest is about. And it's going to be a little more serious than we usually do on the show, but it's very, very important. And it's very, very important to you as listeners to podcasts. It's very important to listeners as, you know, who listen to podcasts to understand what's going on. And, you know, basically anybody that uses the internet, if you're really active in social media, this directly affects you as well. And, Jennifer, do I sound okay? Is it all right to continue?
You may continue.
Okay. So what they're talking about is two bills that are in Congress. One is called SOPA, S-O-P-A, and one is called PIPA, P-I-P-A. And what they are designed to do is to help stop copyright infringement. These are being pushed by the record labels are the biggest, these are being pushed by record labels. They are the biggest ones that are out there trying to stop, obviously, copyright infringement. And that is an important topic. And they've gotten Congress's attention with this now. The problem with this is these bills were written by congressmen who really don't understand the Internet. They don't understand the freedoms of the Internet. A lot of them haven't read the entire bill. And they're getting a lot of pressure now from people in the community, from their constituents who are calling them by the thousands every day to stop these bills from going forward. And I wanted to go over with you what the bills say so that you understand why this is so important, why so many websites today are doing these protests.
Yeah, I'm confused about the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, hopefully we can clear it up here by the end. And there was one of the best articles I saw about it was on Mashable.com. And Jennifer, I'll have you post that Mashable link that you see right there in our show notes on our Facebook page. And what it basically says is there's three components to it, is any site that allows users to post content that is primarily designed for the purpose of services in a manner that enables copyright violations. In other words, if you post a copyrighted song on YouTube, like a friend of ours did this morning. She had a horse that died, and she posted a YouTube video up there with pictures of her horse, and it was very well done, and she used a famous country singer song. Right now, what happens is YouTube will look through those videos, and they might take off the sound for that. Now, if they find it, they might remove the sound, and you've seen videos where it says the sound has been removed because it's copyright violation. Now, she put it up there as a memorial to her horse. She wasn't really intentionally trying to violate copyright. She just thought it would be a nice thing to do. Well, what this new law says is the site doesn't have to be clearly designed for the purpose of copyright violation. It only has to provide functionality that can be used to enable copyright violation. So in other words, what they're saying in this bill is that a site like YouTube is there primarily, if it enables copyright violation in any way, it is there for the purpose of violating copyright. And that means that they can go after YouTube under this law for being a website that allows infringement. And by doing that, they can actually go to have the website removed. Taken down. The problem with this law is what I'm going to get to in the next section is that they can try and do that now, but they have to go through the court. It has to be proven under United States law that it is a copyright violation, that they are intentionally doing this, and they have to be punished for intentionally doing this. The compromise that everybody's come to is if somebody contacts YouTube or Facebook or Wikipedia or Google and says that this website or this video is a copyright violation, they just remove it. That's what happens now. It's just removed. The record industry, everybody the movie industry, they want to go a step further and say, we want to bypass the court. We don't want to have the courts involved anymore. We want to be able to contact YouTube directly and just say, this is a violation, that it needs to be removed without any due process. They also want to say, let's say we played a song which we were very careful not to do, that violates the copyright, that we play a song by a famous band, what this new law says is that band or the record label for that band could contact our service provider where we host our website with, and they could without due process, they could say, okay, we're going to contact your service provider and we're going to have your website removed, and what the service provider would be obligated to remove our website within 5 days. So we could wake up one morning and the Horse Radio Network would be gone and we won't even have been notified about it. We'll just wake up and it's going to be gone. There'll be a message there that says you violated somebody's copyright without due process, without going through court. That's why this bill is so dangerous. So it takes out the due process. It takes out the things that we are protected with, you know, in our Bill of Rights here in the United States and the Constitution that says that you have to be taken to court and it has to be proven that you're doing something wrong. And but you do get a recourse, but it's the way the bill is written, your recourse comes after your site's been taken down. So it's so stringent, it's so strict, and that's the reason that there's so much concern about this bill. It goes way beyond anything that's ever been done before, and it really goes after the freedoms that the internet has enjoyed. You know, the internet's been pretty free of taxation, of regulation. It's been open.
Well, that's why the government wants it. I mean, wait, hold on. There's all this stuff that we could be making money on and we're not. Well, let's figure that problem out.
Well, they give you an example of how far this bill goes, and this is the example that they give. If you have one of your children, let's say 5 years old, and uploads a video to YouTube of them singing a popular song, and let's say that song sells for $1. You know, it's a 99-cent song on YouTube. And the video gets 2,500 views. That child is now guilty of a felony copyright infringement for just uploading the song. Whoever uploaded it is going to be guilty of a felony for uploading the song because it becomes a felony if it is viewed more than 2,500 times. More than a value of $2,500 worth. So if the song sells for 99 cents and it's viewed 2,500 views, which we all know a video that like that can go in a half a day, they could actually bring a suit against you and charge you with a criminal offense for that copyright violation. That's how far this bill goes. It basically takes a lot of the fun out of what's been happening. And I understand copyright. We have copyrights too on all of our content, but we take a little different view. If somebody wants to take one of our shows, we open our shows up to everybody. That's the idea of new media and the internet. If we open our shows up to everybody, if they want to play a piece of our show and promote our show, we welcome that. That's what we feel that new media and the internet is all about. And I understand that the record labels have to protect their interests, but what we're saying here and what the opponents of this are saying, by the way, the opponents are many, many big companies, like Facebook and Google and YouTube and the list goes on and on and on. They're saying that this bill goes way too far, basically turns us all into criminals, and I'll give you a couple more examples just to make the point and then we'll go on. The Chronicle Forum. If somebody posted something on the Chronicle Forum, a picture that was copyrighted, and the copyright holder of that picture, let's say they took a picture off the New York Times. The copyright holder then of the New York Times could go to the host of the Chronicle Forum and say, they violate copyright. We're asking that you remove the Chronicle Forum. The Chronicle Forum, under this bill, could technically be taken down without their knowledge within 5 days and removed. If you have a website that allows commenting and one of those commenters posts something that's copyright, you're responsible for that. So you have these larger websites that have commenting, you're going to see it turned off. You're just going to see free speech, and the thing that makes the internet so much fun, the ability to comment and to have interaction between each other, you're going to see a lot of that removed because everybody's going to be scared to death that they're going to be held liable for what their summoners say. That's why.
Right. Now, Glenn, what I'm noticing here is, like, say, you were mentioning Craigslist. I went to Craigslist, just regular old Craigslist. It has a link that you can click on. And how can you oppose this bill yourself? Obviously, these websites are doing a fantastic job. I think this may be one of those protests, unlike Occupy, whatever, that actually might work. Because these websites are making us talk about it. And to talk and to tell you how, all you have to do is go to, say, Craigslist. Click on the link that they have, and they will give you a list of things that you can do to petition this bill, including phoning your member of Congress via the Progressive Change app on your phone. You can contact the senators that are refusing to meet with constituents about it's called PIPA and SOPA, the bills that are trying to pass. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of options that you can do. Just go to Craigslist right now. Click on the link there, and they have links to how you can oppose this. I do think that these websites are doing a fantastic job. I'm sorry, I just don't think we need more government. Seriously, people, less government.
Yeah. And, you know, the administration says they're opposed to these bills, but we can't count. Administrations, I don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican, it has nothing to do with this argument. Administrations change their mind all the time because there's a lot of pressure. They get donations from these companies, from the record labels and from the movie labels. They get huge donations to their campaigns. The administration, they just change its mind if this goes through Congress. So we can't count on the administration stopping this. It's something you have to contact your legislators right now. And the one cool thing, and mind on this, the one cool thing about that link that Jamie just said off of Craigslist is it does list, gives you a list of the congressmen and how your congressmen are voting on this particular topic. So you can look up your own, and you can contact them directly. So thank you for that.
You know what? Craigslist did awesome because I'm reading this, and it's like, here's the people that are supporting it. Now, to let you know, I am trying to prepare for a weekend away, and I was going to go to Walmart today. But, you know, after reading this, I'm not going to Walmart because they're a supporter of these bills, and it goes on the list, Time Warner, News Corp, Walmart, Nike, Tiffany, Chanel, Rolex, Juicy, Sony, Ralph Lauren, Visa, MasterCard, Comcast, ABC, Dow Chemical, Sponsor Cable, and Teamsters. And then it goes on to say these opponents are Google, Yahoo, Wikipedia, Craigslist, Facebook, Twitter, everything that we use every single day that is such a part of our lives are opponents to this. So I had no idea about this one. Very, very interesting.
Well, you know, we're going to bring Liam on here. He's waiting for us to talk to us from Ireland. He's the director of the Equestrian Social Media Award. And I want to get him on here, and we're going to talk about the fact that the voting has begun, as we talked about yesterday. And, of course, you've seen it all over Facebook. Everybody's soliciting votes for their own company. But, you know, the reason that we wanted to talk about the SOPA thing earlier is because it directly affects social media. It directly affects what all of us do on the Internet every day, the commenting on blogs and all of that. This affects that, which is why we thought it was so important. And you know, the freedom is what allows Liam to do the Equestrian Social Media Award and for us all to partake in that. It's the freedom from regulation on the Internet like they're talking about doing. So sorry to bring you into that deep conversation, Liam, but we in the United States are really concerned about that today. So good morning, or afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. How are you?
Hey, Liam.
Kurt's doing good. We're going to line things up with you now. It's been a serious 20 minutes here on the show. So now the voting has begun.
It has. Oh, my God. And we've literally just had the 5,000th voting form through. Oh, my God.
In one day.
Yes. Just over a day and a half. So, things are going well at this end. But I must say, you were saying about those bills, and we are well aware of them over here as well, and they're incredibly important because as much as we can, obviously the winners of the ESMAs will be announced via an online award ceremony on YouTube, and finalists have been asked to send in 1 minute acceptance speeches. Now, we've had to make it very, very clear that they shouldn't include any copywritten material because we have to, as much as we can, cover our backs to ensure that our finalists and we don't get into trouble over any copywritten material. So we're well aware of it, on this side of the pond as well, don't worry.
Well, you know, and that's true because those attempted speeches, if there's music behind it, you now under these bills would be responsible to make sure that every piece of that music is not copyrighted. That would become your responsibility then.
Absolutely, yes.
It's insane.
Yeah. And so let's remove that problem by not buying any music.
Did you even get 5,000 votes all last year?
It was just over 4,000 during the month-long voting period.
Wow.
It's kind of but it's all really good. We received just over 8,000 nominations before Christmas, and then myself and a few friends that I wrote in went through the finalists, and we selected the 20 of the nominees, and we selected the 10 finalists in each category based on the number of unique supporting statements, so supporting statements that were about the nominee's social media activity, and if any of the supporting statements were incredibly compelling, like for example this one, person who nominated said that they were doing relief work in Africa, and they got access to the internet once a week, and this one Facebook page allowed them to kind of keep in contact with the equestrian world back home in their home country. And we just thought, you know, statements like that really, you know, it just shows how valuable social media is at, you know, it's not just about your friends. It enriches the online world for equestrians, and it's such a valuable resource. And I would hate to think that anyone would be able to destroy that with a bill, you know, in another country. But I suppose it's just keeping the billionaires happy, isn't it?
That's partly true. So now you have a whole bunch of categories. Let me talk a little bit about the technological part of the voting, and so if I go to questionsocialmediaawards.com/voting, and we'll post the link again, do I have to vote for each category? Like, there's some I just don't know any of them. Do I have to vote for each category, or will it let me vote for just certain categories?
Yeah, you can vote for one, or you can vote in all. The main thing is that we would ask that you, there's some criteria on the voting page. We want people to kind of keep in mind. We want you to look at all of the finalists in one category or as many categories as you want to vote in, and we want you to look at a few things. If you can look at, think of their innovation, like are they thinking outside the box? Are they individual? You know, is their content original? Inspiration, are they, you know, are you compelled to act, buy, or share? Interaction, so do they involve their fans and followers and encourage discussions? And information, is it accurate and useful to their audience? So if you keep that in mind, have a look at each of the 10 finalists in whichever categories you want to vote in. And then all you have to do is go to the bottom, input your email address, and click vote now. The very important thing is only allowed to submit one voting form.
Okay, so it's one voting per, like, email address? Is that the way it works?
Well, basically, we'll be looking at IP addresses and email addresses, and where there are similar IP addresses, we will then be looking for similar emails. And if we think that one person has used, if they have numerous similar email addresses, you know, the same name or whatever, then we just have to assume that that's one person who submitted, you know, more than one voting form. And in which case,
God darn it, I have like 20 email addresses, and I just voted like 20 times, and now you're going to kick them all out.
Yeah, unfortunately, sorry.
Damn. Now, what if, like in our home, we have two or three people in a family home, say, and they all want to go on and vote with their own individual emails, so like 3 to 5 in one household is not going to cause red flags, but a ton of them would, right?
Well, so long as they have different email addresses and, you know, they're not the same name in each email. So like, Chad. Amy's email, I would assume, have Chad and Jamie in them.
Sure. I'm not going to tell you what they are because we may be expecting.
Here we are. I don't know. We're violating one of those rules he just talked about, trying to figure out how to scam the system here with our voting.
Liam, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, okay? That's what I was told.
Rules make games fun.
Exactly.
Now, I will say that we were very pleased and happy to be nominated in Category 19 for Broadcast Media. But boy, did we have some serious competition. Every TV network out there.
Indeed. Yeah, you're up against some French TV channels, German TV channels, Horse and Country in England, some TV stations in Australia, America. So, you know, you're in really good company, but I have faith in you guys. Don't get disheartened. The voting, basically, it's 30% public vote because we wanted to make sure that the public still had a say in the final decision, because at the end of the day, it's the public who makes social media so good. But in addition to that, 70% of the final scores will be decided by a group of experts, digital marketing, and equestrian PR professionals from across the globe. We've quite a few members of the expert panel from the United States, but also from Sweden, England, Germany, France, Ireland, Australia. So that there are a broad variety of individuals from a range of disciplines. So the experts will hopefully basically give the award some credibility, that it's just, you know, it's not just who's got the most fans that wins. It's actually, you know, it's a more thoughtful process.
So it's not entirely, what you're saying is it's not entirely on the vote of the public. You're also taking a look at all those criteria you talked about earlier yourself to make sure that the right company or right person company page is chosen.
Absolutely. And the judges were sent a list of finalists already, and they had to declare any conflicts of interest. So if they currently freelance or work part-time for any of the finalists, they had to announce that so that other finalists would then, other judges would then judge those categories.
Well, I got to ask you, last year you were slammed, because this was just a sort of a thing you came up with at the last minute. You put it all together. You had no idea what the response would be, and you got slammed with responses, and the workload was unbelievable. Now, has technology been your friend this year? Have you been able to decrease the workload by having technology help you a bit?
Oh, absolutely. There's been some considerable investment in online resources. It's a much easier process this year. But in all fairness, the Esners are such a pleasure to run. It's such an honor to be able to award equestrians who make the online world such a joy to be part of. It's not really work. It's fine.
Well, now give also a plug for the company that started all of this. So give yourself a plug.
I run a design agency in Manchester. I'm Irish, but I live in England at the moment. I run a little web design company in Manchester called Abbey View Equine, named after my parents' farm. But we're a little business, but with massive aspirations. We provide easy to use websites for equestrian companies in Europe, and we just got our first client in North America, McLean Ward, who's
Yay!
Yeah, that's terrific, and he'll have plenty of time over the next couple of months to help you get the website going.
Yeah, he's got loads of time to update his website.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you, Liam. We appreciate you being on. We want to remind everybody that we'll be doing, I don't know what to call this, and what I've been calling it is, on Horses in the Morning here, we'll be doing, for the second year in a row, the ESMA wrap-up show. I'm calling it the wrap-up show. Does that sound like a good thing?
Yeah, that's good. So the winners will be announced during ESMA week, which will be the 5th to the 9th of March. So if you can, the week after, it would be awesome if you could do the wrap-up show.
All right, so we'll work on the Monday after that. Why don't we do that?
Okay, yeah, that works. Thank you very much.
Okay, cool. We'll work on that. We'll do the wrap-up show and get as many of the winners, because there's a lot more this year, so I don't know we're going to be able to get everybody on in an hour and a half, but we'll do what we can. We'll give them all 10 seconds. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Hi, bye.
All right, Liam. See you later. Thanks
so much. Have a good day.
Hi, Liam.
I thought he was still in Ireland. I didn't realize that he lived in England.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, so we'll have to keep up with him a little bit better on Facebook. But I just love listening to him talk. I could just listen to him talk all day.
And we apologize to everybody. He actually has a little bit of a delay. So when you have the connection here with our phone system from overseas, we get a little bit of a delay. That's why there's a little delay when we're talking to people overseas. So we do apologize for that. Let's take a break for our sponsor for today, and that's Back on Track Products. And we're going to be back, hopefully, with a guest to talk to us about No Polo, something that I'm interested to hear more about. And, you're always talking about the hot polo guy. The problem with No Polo is you get to see a lot less of them.
I know. It's a complete waste. Complete. But we're going to address that. If we can get hold of him, we'll address that. Apparently, he's driving to the mountains again, as he was last time. So we may never actually talk to Barry Stout, the snow polo director. We'll see if he actually gets on. But by the time we get back from playing Back on Track.
Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work and what is the science behind them. Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science, as well as skilled textile production. This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflected heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
I must admit, Glenn, that Back on Track love their products. They're fantastic. And do you remember the product that I might have purchased the last time we were with Back on Track people?
Oh, yes, I do. Do you really want to talk about that on the air?
Let me just tell you that I have confiscated them, and they're awesome.
What she would be talking about is a pair of boxer shorts that Back on Track sells, not for your horse, but for your hubby. So you have taken your hubby's boxer shorts. By the way, did they exactly explain what they were supposed to do? Because all Back on Track products, increase blood flow and circulation. Is that what they
now,
were supposed
Glenn,
to do?
That was, I can't, I'm not going to go on about that.
You don't know, honey.
I was just saying that I have confiscated the Back on Track boxer briefs because, yes, they increase blood flow. They're supposed to help with, digestion, maybe back pain. I don't know, but I just think they're, the most comfortable, fun things to sleep in.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying about that. Let me just tell you, lady, buy the Back on Track underwear.
Saddle. That's what we're talking about, is the glute muscles while you're in the saddle. That's what we're really referencing. Nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking too when I got them, and let me just tell you that they're fun for women to wear too.
All right, let's. I see a Viagra replacement here. We could make millions doing spam.
I know. Back on the box to breathe, people.
The Viagra replacement. I'm sure Beau will be very proud that we said that today. Let's to Daily Winnie's while we're waiting for our guest to show up. And why don't you go first?
Well, before you so rudely deleted the Daily Winnies from the beginning of the show, I had to. and I'll just go ahead and I'm going to do both my Daily Winnies, whether you like it or not. And my first Daily Winnie goes to none other than the Eclipse Award-winning Animal Kingdom. Animal Kingdom is back in training. If you remember, he has not run, and this is, of course, your favorite Disney horse one. He has not run in a race since the Belmont Stakes. And, of course, at the Belmont was where the horse that ran into Mucho Macho Man and Mucho Macho Man ran into Animal Kingdom. Well, he came in sixth place, but after that, a hairline fracture was found in his left hock. He underwent surgery to stabilize the injury. He said he might never run again. Well, he is back on the track, and he worked half a mile at Palm Meadows Training Center in Florida. And check this out. They're keeping him, like, I mean, they still have some pretty high hopes because Animal Kingdom is going to run in, like, one prep race in February, and then it's going to fly over to Dubai to do the $10 million Dubai World Cup in March.
Wow. $10 million.
That's Dubai for a $10 million horse race. So, hey, question for you, Glenn. Who was the first American to win the Dubai World Cup?
This first American horse?
Yeah, the first horse from the U.S. to win the Dubai World Cup. You've met him.
Oh, was it Cigar?
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that you learned something about the Dubai World Cup that long.
That was one of the first ones. And, of course, it's called the Dubai World Cup back then. It was a race in Dubai. And I'm sure that somebody will correct me if it's wrong. So I'm just waiting on, you know, somebody to post something. I always get in trouble when I do fun facts.
Especially off the cuff of your research.
Exactly. No, I'm pretty sure about this one, though. I've got another Daily Winnie, Glenn. My second Daily Winnie goes to my big boy horse, Jet. Jet, the big boy horse, yesterday had to load up into a horse trailer, which he does all the time, to go to lessons. But this time, we went to the vet. And we went to the vet for non-emergency purposes. I actually set an appointment, and we actually went to the vet by choice. And what we went for was he had to get his Coggins and his health certificate to go to California. He's like a real competition horse now. He has a Coggins and a health certificate, and he's got papers to travel. Oh, they come in on Friday. So I'm pretty excited. It kind of makes him like a big boy real competition horse, doesn't it?
Yeah, and pretty soon he'll have a passport to go international, and you'll be as badass and burly, and we'll be covering it live.
Remember, you told me that if I make it to the training 3 day in November, you're flying out here, so you better start saving your nickels and your dimes.
Okay, yeah, we said, I think not only did we say we'd fly out, I think we actually volunteered to groom, didn't we?
Yes, you'd be in the 10-minute box.
Do you have a mouse in your pocket? I've groomed in 3 days before. That's torture.
Then that
makes you perfectly well experienced, and we'll appreciate that.
You better start getting in training now, Glenn, because at a 3 day event, if you're a groom, you're going to put on at least 26.5 miles.
Yeah.
Right. Got to walk the course, got to do all that stuff. It'll be fun. We'll have a good time. I'm excited.
Start getting ready. Start getting ready. Yeah. Start getting ready. Go to some 10 minute boxes. Take a look. That's what you're going to be doing when we make it to, well, like Badminton and Burley and Rolex. I mean, you know, it's going to be great. Anyway, so yes, big boy horse, got some big boy papers, and we are going this weekend to Galway Downs in California, in Temecula, California, and schooling cross country. So the competition is going to be February 3rd and 4th, first one of the year for me. And we're going to go schooling this weekend, and my husband is going to go. We're going to sleep in our brand new trailer, and it's going to be great.
Wow. Well, that sounds like fun. I do have a piece of advice for you, though. If you get up to those upper levels, I would highly recommend a groom other than me if you plan on winning anything. Just saying.
You'd be fired immediately.
Yeah, if my ADD kicked in and I'd be off when your horse is supposed to be getting saddled up, you know, I'm getting a hammer.
Jet would have one bell boot.
Yeah.
One rein through the running martingale.
His mane would be half braided and look like crap, and
would you guys actually braid for me? Because that'd be great. Anything is better than what I do.
Jennifer's a great braider. Don't let her tell you otherwise, too. She's a great braider. She knows how to braid all the fancy stuff. So. All
right, I got my groom.
French braid.
Bring it on.
So I assume we're still waiting for the guests, or something happened here, Jennifer?
I don't know. They must be having a blizzard out there in Colorado. That's all I can come up with.
Is this just the second time we've tried to have these people on for the snow polo?
This is our second try for snow polo.
I'm starting to hate snow polo, by the way. Just saying. I'm really starting to dislike snow polo, and I don't even know anything about it. Well, I don't want to do a daily mini for this. I just wanted to bring it up. There was a horse barn fire again over the weekend. This was in the Poconos up, I think it might have been in Pennsylvania. And it was Pleasant Ridge Farm near Mountain Home in Monroe County. And this is a mountainous area. Now, keep in mind that this was a barn fire and that the fire company, the Barrett Township Fire Company, was less than a mile from the farm. Yet by the time they noticed the fire and the fire company got there, there was nothing they could do. The fire had spread so quickly. It was a wood barn, and there was hay storage, again, on the upper story, like most barns, I hate to say. Remember how in the fire safety shows that we've done, they say don't store your hay in the barn, yet we all do it. We did it. A lot of people do it just because it's the only place they have to put the hay. Yet it was the hay that really caught on fire, and then the roof collapsed, and it fell on the horses. More than there were dozens of firefighters there, but unfortunately in this barn fire, nearly a dozen animals were killed, including the horses. There was nothing they could do. They tried to get the horses out, but the fire was just going too bad. There were 9 horses and 1 pig that were killed in the fire. 4 horses for the owner of the barn were lost. It was a tragedy, and it just reminds us that we need to take a look at your barn safety and your fire protocol. We did 2 shows on this last year, and I would refer you back to those shows if you didn't hear them. We did a show on 6/15 on June the 15th, and we did a show on on April the 21st on fire safety. So go back and listen to both of those and take a look at your barn safety. Now, I know out there in Phoenix, you have a different situation because you really don't have a barn, so to speak, right? You don't have a structure that has stalls underneath and hay on top.
No, that's one thing I'm really glad about. I did grow up where we had the hay storage on top of the barn, and that just, it just is scary as can be. If for some reason I was to have a barn like that, I think that I would require an outbuilding somewhere to put the hay, because it just scares the bejesus out of me to have all the wiring in there and the hay sitting right on top, right above your horses. I think with enough stories that we've heard and we've read about the barn fires, I mean, I would do whatever I could to get it out of there.
Now, the one good thing, if there is a good thing out of all of this, is that the owner of the barn did have insurance, which is nice to note that they did have insurance. The exact cause of the fire hasn't been determined, but insurance is another thing, you know, we've talked about in those fire safety shows, is to make sure that you do have your barn and you're insured, your horse is insured. And that is something, you know, Jennifer and I still don't have Beaker insured, and we should. Even if you have a trail horse, you should have the health and life insurance on them. And have you ever done that with your horses? Have you ever done the insurance on Jet at this point?
Yeah, my warm blood has had insurance for quite some time.
Okay, so you have taken the time now to do that. And, you know,
but
a
you
lot
know
of
what? I mean, the whole point, if I can comment about insurance real quick, is like, yeah, you can have insurance on your horse, but it's not going to protect him from loss. You know, I mean, Insurance is important. I even told the insurance company, I'm like, I don't want anything if he dies. I just want him to be able to have surgery. You know, I don't care. I don't need money. If you can take the whole pay me if he dies thing off of it, if that'll lower my premium, because all I want to do is be able to have him have college surgery or have, like, if he is in a fire, then he has to go and, like, Neville gets a lot of great treatments and everything like that.
Right. Exactly. Yep. I agree. Now, you know, obviously people have life insurance if the horse is very valuable and they have owners and things like that, then that's why they have life insurance in situations like that. But check your barn fire safety policies. We definitely want to make sure that that you have that covered. You have some news for about William Fox Pitt had some bad news too. Perfect bad news morning here on Wednesday.
Man, it's very sad. Cool Mountain, of course, the horse we've seen at Rolex a ton, Glenn. Cool Mountain has been, is basically out of the running for the Olympics. Apparently, he had a tendon injury in Germany, and they're giving him a whole year off. He does still have two other horses, Oslo and Parkland Hawk. And, just very sad, though, because Cool Mountain was like his game on horse, you know what I mean? So, unfortunately for him, Cool Mountain is out for William Fox Pitt. He does have a couple more. Also, Mary King just got to ride on a horse called Chilly Morning, who is a 4-star eventing stallion. Now, I'm sure there's a little bit of drama here because a guy named Nick Gauntlet produced him from novice all the way up to taking him to Burley last fall where he jumped around clear, and they've handed him off to Mary King. So I'm sure that somehow the owners were not happy with Nick, and they said, well, Mary King is like the best in the world, so let's hand it off to Mary King. So congrats to her for having a horse named Chilly Morning. Hey, I just posted a link on Facebook, Glenn. I want everybody to go check it out. Guess what's happening on February 11th?
I don't know.
Well, if you looked at Facebook, you would, because I posted it because they are doing another prison Mustang auction. There's 16 horses that have been prison trained in the Northern Nevada Correctional Center, and the auction takes place Saturday, February 11th, and I posted the link. I'm going to Reno, baby.
Hold on, Jamie, hold on. I'm getting a call. Oh, look, it's Chad. Let me take this. Hi, Chad. Good to talk to you. Oh, yeah, she's just talking about that auction. Oh, okay. All right, no problem, Chad. Thanks. Bye. He says you're not allowed to go, and you're not even allowed to talk about it.
Maybe for those other people that are interested, I posted the link, and the catalog and the flyer is on there, so you can go and check it out. If anything, they are always taking donations. The horses really don't go for a lot of money. I mean, $800 to $1,000 is the average. Some as low as $300, some don't sell. Some go up to $3,000. It just depends on how pretty they are. This seems to be one of those groups that looks all day, and there's like one appy, so the Appaloosa will probably go for $2,000, and all the bays will be $400 or $500. So if you want a professionally trained horse, or at least a good story horse, you know, hey, this is my prison trained Mustang, go ahead and check them. They've got 120 days of training by the inmates, and it's just something cool to do, you know? Go get yourself a prison Mustang.
Sounds good. Well, one other thing, and then we're going to go to our song, and we're going to get to thehorse.com, because you really want to talk about injecting horses, so we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I want Jennifer to post a link. You'll find it at the bottom of the show notes there, Jennifer. She's the guy that they're looking for. They have another suspect in the, remember the whole Southern Arkansas University stacks of all the horses, and they were found tied to trees, and one of them died, and they arrested that woman that they're now trying. We've been talking about this story endlessly. Well, they have an APB now out on William Webster Billy Hamilton, and if you see him, you're being asked to call. They're really looking for this guy. He apparently was in school, from what I understand, time of the loss, he was in the school and now has disappeared, and they think he was involved in the theft of the horses, and they're really trying to find him. They have his picture. Jennifer will post it on Facebook. if you come and contact this guy, they say, do not approach him. Just call local law enforcement and have him arrested. So let's help find this guy and make sure that he doesn't do anything.
I think I know him. Do you? Well, yeah, I think he was a farrier. I think he was a farrier I had in Kentucky. Kind of what he
looks like.
Looks
like a farrier, doesn't he? So
yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So if you know William Webster Billy Hamilton and knows whereabouts, call your local law enforcement and let them know about this warrant out for his arrest for this horrible crime that happened. If you remember right, and I'm just saying this to let you know, again, if you didn't follow the story how horrible it was, one of the horses was murdered and found dismembered by this particular group just because of a little hate they had for the owner of the horse. So let's get this guy off the street as well as the woman who hopefully will go to jail forever. And I even forget her name because I totally not even wanted to remember it. So do you remember her name?
I don't care. I hate her.
Right. All right, let's do our song. You want to
allegedly.
Allegedly. Thank you very much.
Allegedly, I hate her. You sound so bad to say that. Yeah, we've got a... Glenn was kind enough today to upload and play for me a Jared Rogerson song. My husband is in the room right now, so I will say that Jared Rogers is not attractive, nor is he talented. Okay, he's awesome. So Jared Rogerson, Above the Timberline, jaredrogerson.com to check it out.
The city offers you convenience, and this old mountain offers you no lenience. But it's the life I choose to lead. Peace of mind's what I receive. I make my home above the timberline, in my saddlebag. Who knows what you'll find on my trusty steed? I've got everything I need up here on the crazy line. I went to college searching for my way. Textbook for rodeo seemed a pretty even trade. Well, I guess fate can handle each and every day. Wouldn't have it any other way. Now I make my home above the timberline, in my saddlebag. Who knows what you'll find on my trusty steed? I've got everything I need up here on the crazy line. There's bighorn sheep. Look, there's an eagle flying down there. Got fish to eat, and up here there ain't no bear. It's the place that I reside, up above the timberline. Tate's in charge of every day. Wouldn't have it any other way.
That is Jared Rogerson, Above the Timberline. I just love his music. And you can find him at jaredrogerson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by Back on Track Products. And, Glenn, do we need to tell you who the song is sponsored by today?
Yes, the song is sponsored by FeedXL, and we have we want to let FeedXL tell you a little bit about themselves, and then we're going to be back with Dr. Joe from the horse.com.
Poor Gypsy is suffering from horse envy. He's the new kid in the pasture and can't get over the stamina and shape of his fellow stallmates. Rumors around the barn point to FeedXL. Seems their owner has been online and discovered the FeedXL nutrition tool. That means Gypsy's in for a big transformation. The other horses have been telling Gypsy all about the changes made to their diet and how FeedXL has improved their overall well-being. When it comes to your horse's diet, conflicting advice can result in overfeeding and money wasted. With a FeedXL nutrition tool, enter your horse's weight, diet, and activity level to get started. It'll allow you to see where your horse's diet stands and give you the opportunity to revise it until it's balanced. FeedXL has the latest science backing them up, allowing you to take charge of your horse's diet with an easy-to-use nutrition tool, taking the guesswork out of what to feed your horse. It's almost like Gypsy has his own personal nutritionist right at the barn. Visit FeedXL.com for a simple and easy nutrition tool to balance your horse's diet for optimum health.
It's time for the weekly health report from Horse.com. Fantastic information and Chrissy's attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Well, excuse me there for the dog barking. Boomer,
I always thought it was part of the jingle there for a minute.
No, see, what had happened was Boomer actually looked out the window and saw a horse. Woo! That is frightening. Better bark at him.
First time ever in your farm.
I know, it's craziness. Well, we have got Dr. Jones on the line right now with FloridaEquine.com, and we're going to talk a little bit about hawk infections today. Good morning, Dr. Jones.
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing fantastic. It's, you know, that time of day, but we're pushing through. We never got to talk about snow polo, so that's why you're on a little bit early, whether you like it or not.
I don't mind a bit, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to ruin Glenn's lunch today, but we'll certainly try, like we always try to.
I know. Well, we'll slip something in there, I'm sure. But I know that who does not want to be on early is our guest from California. We've got Dr. Richard Martell from San Diego, California. And I do believe that you would like to introduce him and maybe tell a little story about him from this morning.
Rich, I've known Richard for, boy, probably over 20 years, Richard. And he does sport horse work out in California. He also, you know, has regular clientele too. It's not just all sport horses. So he sees pretty much the same thing we do here in Florida, the geriatrics. We have some rescue clients. He has some rescue clients, rehab places. But he does a lot more international work than I do. And I guess this morning he wanted to know what he should wear for the radio show. So what are you wearing this morning, Richard?
I'm a bright blue shirt and a really wild belt. And so and I'm barefoot. No, I'm not barefoot. Actually driving to work in the car, so good morning.
You look great. You look great, Doctor. Let me just tell you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I'm really hoping you're not disappointing your clients today by wearing some mundane boots. I hope they get some bright color to those boots.
It is the bright colors. And I was also really excited, Eric, because you told me that the radio makes me look 10 pounds thinner. So I'm really excited about that.
Funny, that doesn't work for me.
Well, let's see. We've got you guys on, Dr. Martell. It sounds like you've got a lot of kind of upper-level clients, and this is probably something that is a daily ritual for you to perform, and probably you, Dr. Jones, too, is hawk injections. Because I know that when you mention the word hawk injections, you're either going to get people to go, oh, yeah, okay, no big deal, or you're going to get people that go, oh, I would never stick a needle in my horse's joint. But what they don't, there's a lot of stuff that they don't understand. And that is why you guys are here to describe the whole point of hawk injections, and let me just tell you that my horse got his hawk done about a month ago, and it's changed his life. So I'm a huge fan, so you're not going to offend me. Dr. Jones, take it away.
Well, thank you, Jamie, and I'm glad to hear that your horse did well after the hawk injections. We always like to hear good results after we do any kind of injections on a horse, including the hawks as well. But the hawk injections are, you know, like you said, some people say, sure, no problem, run-of-the-mill thing to do, and some just are completely frightened about it. And those that are frightened, I think, just don't understand what we're trying to do. They think that when they get a hawk injection, that makes the horse more receptive to needing more hawk injections. And basically what they don't understand is that the horse has got an osteoarthritis going on. And what we're doing is we're taking the pain away. And then the pain comes back, and we have to re-inject, just like you would in your shoulder joints for some steroid joint, steroid injection for shoulder joints, or your knee, your bad knee, your bad tennis elbow, whatever it is, you're getting some sort of steroid help. But you're not overusing it like a horse is, because a horse is an athlete that's being used every day or 5 days a week to perform what it's supposed to be doing. You want to add to that, Richard?
Well, I'd like to take just a half a step back and then kind of go back to this. I think one of the things that we have to remember is, you know, I think there's become this unreasonable fear of corticosteroids. And, you know, it's quite interesting. I think there is some validity for sure with the concern over using too many steroids, because the old, you know, inject a joint and go to a race tomorrow, well, that's a bad thing no matter how you slice it. And that's when corticosteroids are not used effectively and properly. But, you know, we are using in the dosage when we do inject a joint, it's a fraction of the milligrams of cortisone that we used years ago. And we're doing it much more conservatively and much more frequently. So, you know, cortisone is a natural product. Your body produces it as an anti-inflammatory. And sometimes what happens is when these joints get on fire, regardless of what joint it is, you need a corticosteroid to put the fire out. And interestingly enough, I'm going to paraphrase a study that was done quite a few years ago at Colorado State University. And what it did is it showed that they created an inflammation in joints, and some of the horses they didn't do any treatment to, and some of the horses they put in a very, very small dose of a specific corticosteroid. And then they looked at the joints later on, and to make a very complicated research project simple, the horses that had a single low dose of corticosteroids had far less degenerative damage to their joints than the horses where Mother Nature was allowed to just react to the inflammation. So actually, in a way, corticosteroids, when used properly, appropriately, and conservatively, are much better for the joints than not treating them at all. So I think that's Aaron, maybe to start with the corticosteroid discussion.
So
I think that was a fantastic way to start off.
Yeah, no, I do too, and I'm thinking that, like, okay, so you've got the inflammatory cells in the joint capsule, and they're actually doing more damage than putting in the steroid, and so the steroid goes in there and pushes out those bad inflammatory cells and creates a happier, healthier environment. Is that what I'm trying to understand?
Absolutely. Yep. And then the body
can
heal itself, and all the right things can happen in the joint. But you got to put the fire out first.
Right.
And that's
and
what I explained to the clients is, do they want to continue to have that deterioration in the joint going on without any help? And the steroids are the help that we're trying to provide.
Right.
Please
go ahead and comment on that, please.
We're at the East Coast, West Coast delay, so I'm hearing you a second, I think, later. I'm sorry. But, you know, there's kind of an old saying that, you know, there are two types of dressage and show jumping horses, those that have had their hocks injected and those that are going to need to have their hocks injected. And, you know, we joke about it a little bit, but it seems so common because the jumping and dressage specifically are not really a natural biomechanical stress of that joint. So it's very common to get some inflammation in those lower joints in the hocks.
And can you certainly throw in the reining horses and the cutting horses, too? Granted, the horses were made for that quick movement, but it's a little bit of an overuse of the joint when they show them every weekend doing that.
Right, I agree.
So really, I guess we kind of covered the myth part of the hock injection. Is there anything else, Jamie, that you want to add to this?
Yeah.
As a horse owner?
As a horse owner, and I was a vet tech for 10 years, and you hear the people say, oh, my horse, in my experience, they said my horse is going to, you know, need hock injections. They're going to start to rely on it and then have to do it all the time. And what they don't understand is the reason that you think your horse needs it all the time is because your horse feels so much better after getting the hock injections, and then you want to recreate that. So, yeah, you might want more hock injections, but only because your horse takes less time to warm up. He feels a lot better. He jumps better. He travels better. So the horse is not the one actually relying on it. I think a lot of times it's the rider that wants that feeling again.
Well, at the performance level, too, and we can talk, you know, later if you guys want about, you know, what are some of the signs that you're going to see or things that you're going to feel. But, you know, those joints, those hock joints, it's really kind of a funny joint. It's a vestigial joint. I mean, you know, it dates back from 4 million years ago when horses had little split toes and they were 18 inches tall. And so as those two lower joints that the horses have in the hock, there's actually four joints in the hock, and really it's the top one that is responsible for the majority of motion in the hock joint. So that's really kind of the only one they need. And so those lower hock joints, the two lower hock joints, really they call them a high load, low motion joint. So they take a lot of weight, but they don't move a lot. They just rock her back and forth. And you know, probably if we're around in 4 million years, those joints probably won't be there anymore, that they will have evolved into a fused joint. It's arguable, kind of some of the anthropology people will suggest that this early juvenile osteoarthritis that we're seeing in some of these horses, where you'll take an x-ray and it's a, you know, a 3-year-old horse, a 4-year-old horse, and the lower hock joints are just a block of bone, and the horses are sound. They don't have any problem at all, but it's a juvenile arthritis. It's what we call it, but maybe it's actually an evolutionary step, because once those things, and you see it in very sound horses, and it's not a problem, but once those joints are fused, either through degeneration in a middle-aged horse or an older horse, or as a developmental, quote-unquote, abnormality in a young horse, they don't need those joints, and they're sound. So potentially those joints, they don't even need those. It's the upper one that's so important for motion and sound.
And I explained, Dr. Ryan said it's like a nagging mosquito is really what that lower joints act like. It's just enough of a pain to kind of be there every day when they're working to nag at them to say, this hurts, this hurts, this hurts. But it's not such an acute, sharp, sharp pain. It's just a nagging mosquito-type pain where it's just constantly there, and we're just trying to take that little bit of pain away. And I think you brought up another point, Dr. Martel, that the clients kind of think, some of the more educated ones on joint injections think that over time, we're going to fuse that joint with the steroid injections, because you've mentioned the block. And there are horses that do fuse those two lower joints over time, but not every single horse does. I find it on a very rare occasion in my clientele that they actually fuse. And once they fuse, the pain goes away because there's not that constant motion of bone against bone. It's actually completely gone now, and it doesn't move that much, and it can handle that high load. But I rarely find that in my practice. It happens to be just occasional find, but not very often at all.
So I'm curious about that, because I recently had, before we got the hocks injected, we did some x-rays and realized that the hock joints are very close to fusing. But you're telling me that if for some reason they did fuse, I would have a sound horse, and that begs the question, how can I get them fused? I want to do that.
Well, there's a couple of ways to fuse them. One is, you know, what you have to remember is that radiographic degenerative changes don't necessarily correlate with clinical signs. So you can have horrible, horrible hock x-rays, and you can have, you know, I've seen some really elite-level cutting horses that have hock spurs the size of a Volkswagen hanging off the bottom of their hock, and it should have its own name, and they're totally sound, and they don't have a problem. And other horses that may just have inflammation without actually even any radiographic changes that are very lame. So the radiographs, unfortunately, are not not necessarily directly correlated to the degree of clinical signs. But what will happen very oftentimes is as the hocks degenerate, which is normal, in normal arthritis for people, for horses, for cows, for giraffes, I mean, joints fall apart with time because you know, we're not supposed to live to be 120 years old, and horses aren't supposed to be live till they're 30, but a lot of them do. So as time goes on and the joints wear out, and the joint surface wears out, then you will get starting some bone production as the cartilage erodes. And as that bone is being produced, it's really Mother Nature doing a great job trying to say, well, let's try to bridge this joint. And most of the time, or a high percentage of the time, I agree with Dr. Jones, is it doesn't do that. But most of them are managed very, very successfully in a clinical situation where they're not lame, they're not having chronic problems. But occasionally, towards mid and late fusion, if they are, where they're not fusing on their own, there's a couple of ways to fuse them. And you can fuse them surgically, where you actually, it's a big deal, but you go in and you take a drill and you drill out the joint surface cartilage, and then you will immobilize the joint, and then the joint will fuse. The other way to do it is to chemically fuse it. And there's been, over the last 15 years, there's been a couple of different ways to fuse them, what you put in there to make them fuse. But the latest is alcohol. And interestingly enough, alcohol, it's denatured alcohol. You don't put in Jack Daniels, for those listeners in Kentucky. And what you do is the alcohol actually, it's denatured alcohol, and it will actually create some nerve damage. So it not only accelerates the degeneration of the joint, but it tells the nerve, don't be so irritated. And so you have no pain in the joint.
In my experience in those two, and those are two fantastic ways of doing it, the surgery one is very painful, I've seen post-op, and the surgeons do agree that they can be pretty painful. The denatured alcohol, I've done it on a few horses, and I've had some be painful, but not near as painful as the surgery. But those horses were in some extreme arthritic conditions that even corticosteroids couldn't calm down the joint enough. So it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's a last-ditch effort, but it's a more humane effort because the steroids aren't making them comfortable. Nothing's making them comfortable, so let's go ahead and fuse the joints.
For sure. And we'll see, you know, hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of hoplanthuses a year. And maybe one every couple of years will want to fuse or do alcohol on. So it's a pretty unusual procedure. I agree.
So kind of back to your question, Jamie, how do you know that your horse requires its joints to be injected? And, you know, I think Dr. Markell, you know, hit on it a little bit, but also you said it, Jamie, you got almost a brand new horse after the hocks were injected. So you knew the horse was limping in the back when you were riding or wasn't giving enough push from behind. The dressage horses, they don't have, you know, enough propelling forward or forward movement.
What he was doing, actually, Dr. Jones, is he was off behind, more worse in the right hind than he was in the left hind, and he was having some back pain, and he didn't want to have his back brushed, he didn't want to be curried back there, so he was having the back pain that corresponded, like, went into the hocks, and he just took for dang ever to warm up, but he eventually, after 20 or so minutes of movement around, he got sounder.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's textbook hock problems, but explain to people why maybe his back would have hurt.
That sounds like me in the morning every day.
Well, Winter, I'll let you take that one, but you know, basically starting with the lameness exam, just like what you described, is where we would start to determine that the hocks were the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that, you know, I'm going to divert for 2 seconds to tell you kind of a funny story, kind of because nobody got hurt, but I'm very involved with the therapeutic riding for the disabled program, and we had this retired Olympic level 3-day event horse. He was one of the most wonderful horses the program ever had, and, you know, he wasn't the soundest thing in the world, but he was doing his job, and finally it got to the point where it's like, you know, we've really got to fix him. So we did a lameness exam on him. We decided it was his hocks that needed to be injected. We injected his hocks, and he threw two riders. And he was like, you know, 5 years old again. So we had to wait for the injections to wear off till he got to be usable again, and then we kind of managed it a little differently. But so you'll start to see horses that won't be as good at their lead changes. You'll start to see horses that, you know, will change the distance to a fence if they're a jumping horse or unwillingness to go downhills or uphills if they're a trail horse, that sort of thing. So that does it. And what happens is, you know, I look at a horse like a wobbly cheap card table, and when one leg is uneven, the whole table wobbles. And so what happens is horses will start to put stress on their lower backs, and, you know, I'm sure those of you that get dressed up and wear high heels know that, you know, it's not uncommon at the end of the night of wearing high heels, your lower back may be not as comfortable as when you're wearing tennis shoes or paddock boots. And so,
is that personal experience, Richard, there?
Yeah, that's it. I don't see those stilettos anymore. Because of my back. So you'll start to see that, and those are kind of secondary compensatory things. So I learned in vet school that 80% of all back problems are secondary to a hind limb lameness. I don't believe that's true. In fact, I know that's not true, but I went to vet school back when they invented penicillin. So that was a long time ago, and now we know that there's lots of primary back problems. But that's one of the things that you'll often see with horses with back problems. And the acupuncturist certainly can tell us oftentimes that there are some points on the lower back that are very, very commonly seen when you have a positive and abnormal acupuncture point with horses that have hot pain.
And as I get into my world, I have a knee that had to be reconstructed, and with humans, they find they get lower back pains with knee problems because they're compensating. Again, that's the whole thing that Richard's heading to, is that there's compensation going on. So if the hocks aren't working, the horses are going to use some other leg or some other part of their body to compensate to do what you're asking them to do. So rather than completely whack out the whole body and take out all the legs of the card table, let's fix that one leg of the card table so that the horse can continue on in a natural balance and a natural movement.
That's a great point, Erin. And then after you do fix that one leg on the table, then make sure there's nothing else that's affecting.
Absolutely. And I think, Jamie, you brought up a good point, is lameness exam was done on your horse. They localized it to the hocks. They did x-rays, which is really nice. And, again, Richard had made the comment earlier that not always will you have really bad hock disease and a lame horse at the same time. We do, and I'm sure Richard does tons more than I do, but in the pre-purchases, like the one I just did yesterday, the horse had a little bit of a short stride after doing flexions of his hock and stifle. We took x-rays, and it was minimal changes in the hock, kind of what you'd expect on an 11-year-old jumping horse. And, you know, the person was happy. They expected to see those small changes, arthritic changes, and they were happy to see there was very little change on the flexion, a shortened stride. That was kind of accepted. So there's this understanding of relate your x-rays to your clinical exam, just like Dr. Markell had said earlier.
Well, Dr. Jones, isn't it really helpful too when you have those radiographs to compare, you know, in 6 months or a year or 3 years if you do have progressive changes with their great medical history?
Absolutely. I told these people it would be a great base. So, yeah, they were very apt to do these x-rays for a baseline.
Well, and to comment on that, that's exactly why I did the x-rays. It's because I wanted to see, you know, you don't have to go out when you're doing the lameness exam, and you guys are vets, and maybe you agree, maybe you disagree, but it doesn't always, for hock pain, you guys see so much of it that every single time you go out, you see a horse that looks like it has hock pain. You're not always going to do blocks, and you're not always going to do x-rays, and you're not always going to do these full-on things when, you know, you might be able to save money here and there by just go ahead and doing the hock injections. The reason I did them is I wanted to see how bad it was, because my horse has only been an event horse for a year. And so I wanted to get a foundation of what we were looking at to be able to compare it to things in the future. So that's why I went ahead and did the x-rays, and I'm so glad I have them, because that explains why he could barely get the needles in there.
Sure. And that's, you know, that's really, you know, as far as getting the needles in, too, you know, I have to tell you, there are two joints that are commonly injected with the hot joints. Did you guys want to go into those, or...?
Sure, go ahead. You started. Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, okay. So there's really, the hock joint is really complex. It's really weird. It's like our heel, and there's all these really odd, misshapen bones that, I don't know, I wouldn't have designed it that way, but they're all connected together, and they seem to work pretty well. But a couple of the joints will
communicate sometimes, and that means that when you inject one joint, you're giving medication in the other joint. Sometimes when they don't communicate, they'll have diffusion of medication, so that because they're so intimately involved next to each other just through a thin membrane, the joint capsule, that if you put some medication in one joint, it'll just diffuse into the next one. And so you can kind of get some success, and you treated the wrong joint, but you're still doing that. And that's something later, Dr. Jones, if you remind me about, treating the systemic effect of corticosteroids, sometimes can be helpful. But so we usually inject the two lower joints. The lower joint is done on the outside just above the splint bone. And it's a really easy one to hit. It's a nice joint. It's got a pretty big space. And even when horses have degenerative changes in the hock, that's a pretty easy one to hit. And that's the outside joint. The inside joint, which is in the middle, is called the distal intertarsal, the DIT joint. And that one, boy, that can be a real bear to get into. And I do a bazillion of them, and I still have trouble getting into them sometimes. And so if a veterinarian tells you that, oh, yeah, it's no problem getting into them, you know, pick another vet, because they're tough, and I do a lot of them. And it's a little tiny, tiny joint, and sometimes it's only as wide as the needle. And then you throw in a little bit of pathology, and you throw in a little bit of joint junk that's got some lipping or spurs, and it's like trying to, you know, stick a needle into around a corner. And so some of those can be very, very difficult. And sometimes you even need an x-ray to guide yourself into those in the really complicated cases, or if we're sure that's where it is and we didn't get success with treating them, we will sometimes re-inject those with a needle-guided radiograph or ultrasound. Actually, you can use an ultrasound as well to make sure that you're in that joint, because they can be kind of tough. And they're a very small volume. You can't get a lot of medication in there. So those things are kind of tough. Now, right over that inside joint is called the cunion tendon. And the cunion tendon is a little inelastic band that prevents over-rotation of the hock. And so I don't want to get too involved in a radio show, because I wish I could have my hands to show you and an anatomy specimen here to show you the bones and how the tendon works. But it works with torsion of the hock joint. And oftentimes you can have a cunion bursitis, where you get an inflammation of that. So oftentimes when I inject those inside joints, the distal intertarsal joint, I'll save a little tiny bit, and on my way out of the joint, I'll drop just a little bit of medication in that cunion bursa, and that can be helpful as well. And Aaron, you might talk about that surgery where sometimes they will cut the cunion bursa, the cunion tendon, sorry.
Yeah, exactly, and it's the old phrase, cut the jacks. So you hear maybe an older practitioner say, let's cut the jacks on the horse, or, you know, a trainer. And what they'll do is they just kind of release that bursa that's being pressured. It's almost like standing on a water balloon and putting a lot of pressure on it. It doesn't have anywhere to expand except for out to the sides. So once you cut through the cunion tendon, it gives a little bit of release to that bursa that's inflamed. And they find that that seems to help out some of the horses that are pretty painful in the back end. We don't do too many of those here on the East Coast as much as I've seen you guys do on the West Coast, which I don't know if it's a difference of the use of the horses or what, but it's still certainly a procedure that's done.
Well, yeah, we don't do it very often out here anymore either. It's a little bit historical. Most horses' hock issues are managed, you know, medically or with shockwave or other therapies rather than doing that surgery.
Right, shockwave is a common thing for us here. Go ahead, Jamie.
Because we're starting to get to the point of running out of time, I want to find out, what are the medications that you will use in a joint?
There's many of them, and I'm going to go ahead and just name off what I commonly do, and then just briefly mention the others, but then we'll see what Dr. Markell also does. But the first line of defense, basically, that I like to go to is a Vetilog, which is steroid, and HA, hyaluronic acid type product that goes in with it. And those are, you know, my two first go-tos. And if the horse is non-responsive to those, then you can take it up, you know, step it up a notch, and that is either an IRAP PRP type product or a stem cell I've even put into some of the joints type products. You want to go ahead and add to that, Richard?
Well, I think, that's my first go-to also. That August Prime Stallone, the really great thing about that one is that's actually the one that Colorado State did all the work on with showing that it's somewhat protective of those joint surfaces. The nice thing about it is it's a very, very strong, very powerful corticosteroid, but it doesn't last a long time. And so we believe that in joints that, you know, sometimes that long-lasting corticosteroid is what may be some of the problem with degenerative changes. I have to say, that sometimes we'll love to use the Depo-Medrol, which is becoming less common, but in smaller doses, it also can be very effective, and it'll last a little bit longer. But remember, you know, we're hoping not to have our horse stay as sound as only with our corticosteroids working. So that's to say that if you look at Vetilog, that drug that Aaron talks about, that one lasts about 3 weeks. So if you've got a horse you inject in 3 weeks, and he's down for 3 weeks, and then he lame again, he's got a big problem. You need to think about something else. But yeah, those are on my list. And then IRAP is an incredible drug. It's a really cool regenerative process where you basically take a horse's blood and then you mix it with some magic beads, and then you take a serum off those magic beads through, and then you freeze it, and then you can have multiple joint injections put back in the horse. And the really cool thing about that is that it's basically kind of like their own anti-inflammatory. And it's very complex how it works, but it blocks inflammatory mediators in the joint. Unfortunately, I haven't had great luck using IRAP in hocks. We use it almost daily in other joints and horses. But for the hock joint, I've had a little less success. How about you, Aaron?
I would agree. I would, even the stem cells in the hock joint, I haven't had that great of success on. So, but I still like my steroid mix, and that seems to work fairly nicely. And then, of course, like I said, I've had a couple that have done the denatured alcohol because they just kept being non-responsive, and the horse was pretty painful moving around.
For sure. And the hyaluronic acid is great because it's a lubricant, and it's, you know, basically artificial joint fluid. And it's made from rooster's combs. I don't know how some smart researcher in a basement somewhere figured that out, but it's made from rooster's combs or synthetic, and it's a gooey, sticky fluid that's like Mother Nature's lubricant.
I had no idea that it was made from rooster combs. I did not know that.
Well, that brings up the other product, which is the Adequan, which I have had good luck in the joint, but it's been on a repetitive basis. It's once a week for 3 weeks, and that's made from, you know, bovine tracheal cells is one of the carriers in there. So then you get another additive added in there. But the Adequan intra-articular, I found luck with, but it has to be used more than once, and trying to get clients to do multiple joint injections on a weekly basis or every 2 week basis can sometimes be a little bit hard.
You guys are on a roll, but our show is ending actually right now. But we would love to, Dr. Martel, have you back to talk about maybe some of the other things and to finish this up. But, you know, I wanted to talk about as well technique and sterile and sedation and post-injection. So we would love to have both you guys back on maybe next week, maybe a couple weeks from now, just to wrap up this whole joint injection discussion, because I've got questions now about new stuff I've never even heard of.
Well, I would love to, and thank you so much for having me. It's always fun, and it's always I have so much admiration professionally for Dr. Jones, so I really appreciate you asking me to participate.
Thank you, Richard, and I love sharing this time with you this morning and hearing what you're wearing this morning. I feel like a very dull person in my pink top and khaki pants. So,
and I wear your high heels.
Yeah, I did post on Horses in the Morning Facebook an article on thehorse.com that they can go to read more about joint disease.
Excellent. Right, you guys, thank you so much for being on the show. We will talk to you. Let's catch up again.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we should mention the reason Michelle from thehorse.com is not with us today is she is doing something very special. She is on her way this afternoon to see the matinee of Warhorse on Broadway. So how cool is that? So we forgave
That's
her.
That's fantastic.
We forgave her. That's thehorse.com. And, of course, you can find more from Dr. Jones at floridaequine.com. That was a great discussion, James.
That was, that's fascinating, and I'm interested to hear more about the IRAP and those. I'd never really heard about that, so definitely have to check that out and hear them back again, because I could talk about stuff like that all day long. I know you're probably bored of tears, Glenn, aren't you?
No, I was just playing Words with Friends. So
oh.
All right, everybody, you have a great day. Enjoy your horses today. Be safe. And we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Don't forget, you can listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com, and you can hear all of our past shows there as well. And don't forget to go check out those fire episodes that we did before, that we talked about earlier in the show. That's it. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Glenn. I'm going to go ahead and sit online here and look at prison Mustangs up for adoption. So I'm in to Reno.
You need to get off that website. Chad,
yeah,
he called
me.
You know, I'm with him. Our score puzzles, we stick together.
Yeah. All right, everybody, spay, neuter, and yell. Bye-bye.
You don't have room. No more horses. Find a farm next door. We'll go.